No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hello, welcome back to another Wisco Fanatics Wednesday. As you can see, I am rolling solo today. Jake is off having some family fun, so I am going to recap the 5 Milwaukee Brewers games from last week to this week, the 4-game series against the Cardinals, and the series opener against the Cubs. So here we go.
Welcome to another episode of the Wisco Fanatic Show, where we cover the Packers, Bucks, Brewers, and Badgers basketball and football teams from an optimistic and realistic perspective.
Wisco Fanatics is brought to you by Cardboard Legacy, Wisconsin's most complete sports card shop. Buy, sell, grade, and consign all at their location in Oshkosh.
Alrighty, so as I said, 5 Milwaukee Brewer games to talk about, starting with the 4-game series against the Cardinals. This was a home series for the Brewers, and to start talking about this series, have to talk about Jacob Mizorowski and his debut, the long-awaited debut of Jacob Mizorowski, and it was cut short a little bit by some cramps that he had in his leg, but what can we all say? I mean, he was electric from the first inning of the game. I mean, just watching him, like, just the first inning of watching him pitch, it's like, oh, he's going to be fun to watch. He throws sliders so hard that they register as cut fastballs. He throws a 96-mile-an-hour slider. It is absolutely insane. Jake popped in to drop a note, said the Miz is a stud. Absolutely. We're going to get to a point where we're going to have to try to think of ways to say things because we're going to run out of ways to talk about Jacob Mizorowski. Seeing him getting Wilson Contreras as his first K was awesome and just really poetic for how this entire series went, which we'll get to some of the other drama when we get to the later games of this series. Now, his command did get a little iffy in the top of the third. He walked a leadoff hitter, got behind 2-0 before getting a ground into a double play and another strikeout. And then in the top of the fourth, he had a 4-pitch walk and a 5-pitch walk with 2 outs. The zone did tighten up a little bit on him there, but the other thing with other his pitches, his 92-mile-an-hour changeup registered as a sinking fastball. So a 96-mile-an-hour slider registering as a cut fastball and a 92-mile-an-hour changeup registering as a sinking fastball is insane. And as I mentioned, he was taken out with some cramping in his calf and quad. You could see it affecting his command a little bit. He is fine, which is good. He kind of twisted his ankle as he was trying to get back to the mound. In the top of the sixth inning and was eventually taken out. He did talk pregame. He was planning on thinking he was going to be throwing 60, 70 pitches was going to be it for him. And he ended up throwing 81. And out of those pitches, he was not quite as accurate as maybe we would want him to be, but still effective. He threw 49 strikes. That's 60.5%. The Major League Baseball average is 63.9%. Jake said, seeing Contreras stand on home plate and still strike out was my favorite thing of the game. God, and people wonder why he gets hit by pitches. We stand to the plate. They're picking on me. Stop standing on top of the plate. So after that, was taken out and totally fine. He's planned as the starter for tonight's game if it happens with the weather that's in the area. But Jacob Mizorowski, 14 pitches over 100 miles an hour. That is tied for the fifth most in a Major League Baseball debut since 2008 when they started tracking it. Wes, he's scheduled to start tonight if that game happens. So could be tomorrow if they end up playing a doubleheader. We'll see. We'll know what the scheduling is when they make an official announcement if tonight's game is going to be canceled or not. But all Brewers starters since 2008 had 8 complete total 100-mile-plus pitches. And Jacob Mazurowski threw 14 in his debut. Of those eight, six of them came from Trevor Megill, who pitched as an opener in 2023 games. So the Brewers essentially have had two pitchers throw 100-plus miles an hour. One of them would be Brandon Woodruff, and one would be Willie Peralta, both through 100.0. And Jacob Mazurowski was reaching up into the 102s. He does a great job keeping the same release point on all of his pitches. That's what makes a lot of his stuff play as even more deceptive. Makes it a little bit harder to judge what's coming out of the hand. And then on top of it, the velocity, obviously. He did have a no-hitter going through five innings, even with a super tight strike zone. But didn't end up finishing it out. 13 total whiffs. Seven of them came on his fastball. And then my last thing on Mazurowski, Pat Murphy post-game, unprompted, said, we saw Woody debut, we saw Peralta debut, we saw Corbin Burns debut and go up and down and then really get on it. We probably have somebody in the same mold. Awesome to hear Pat Murphy say that again, completely unprompted. Nobody brought up any of those guys' names. He brought that all up on his own, which is a really cool thing for Jacob Mazurowski and for the Brewers. Now, on the rest of game one from last Thursday, I love that Sal got another shot to lead off. Last week, after talking about, you know, how he's a tough out, we talked about, you know, the way that he bats, the statistics in his batting, and the way that he just almost never strikes out. He started the first game with an oppo single. His third at-bat was a two RBI single. His fourth at-bat was another single at 108 miles an hour, the hardest hit of his career. And he also made a diving catch in this game. So great game from Sal Frelick. Isaac Collins, bottom of the second inning, had a tough eight-pitch at-bat, got down 0-2, fouled off a couple pitches, got back to 3-2, and then pulled a triple. And Bryce Terang, who was also down in his at-bat 0-2, had an infield single to give the Brewers their first run of the game. Shout out to Pat Murphy just for the lineup construction on that. Again, putting Sal Frelick in the leadoff spot, putting Isaac Collins, who we talked about last week, hitting very well, and Bryce Terang right behind him. Bottom of the fifth, Isaac Collins got on again, did get picked off, but the Brewers responded by going single, single, hustle double, another single, and Joey Ortiz absolutely hot on Caleb Durbin's heels. And a Jackson Turio home run to dead center on the first pitch that he saw, and the Brewers had chased Sonny Gray. Seeing Joey Ortiz and Caleb Durbin, and they said this on the broadcast, yes, Caleb Durbin made the right base running call. If a ball is caught, he's going to score. If the ball falls, he's going to score anyways. Joey Ortiz made the more aggressive play. Caleb Durbin made the safe and smarter play. He was going to score no matter what. Didn't matter that Joey Ortiz was four steps behind him. Top of the seventh, the Cardinals got their first two hits. Both of them came against Ashby. One of them was a broken bat single, and the second was kind of a blooper. But caught stealing shortly after that first one, and then a fly out and a ground out. Ashby did finish the inning, and he finished actually three scoreless innings and got himself a save. So pitch velocities of game one. Jacob Mazurowski by himself had the top 30. Jacob Mazurowski threw the 30 hardest pitches of this entire game by himself. The Milwaukee Brewers accounted for the top 53 pitches between Jacob Mazurowski, Nick Mears, and Aaron Ashby. So the Brewers, game one, just came out throwing heat at the Cardinals, and the Brewers got the win. Going into game two, Freddie Peralta got off to an efficient start, had 3 2/3 innings perfect, did get through four innings with just 55 pitches. The fifth inning, he ran into a lot of traffic, threw 26 pitches. The sixth inning, he allowed two out base runners, and Pat Murphy let him stay out, and he got the final out on a pop-out. All things considered, I'll take six innings pitched from Freddie Peralta on 93 pitches and only one walk. Pretty solid start from Freddie Peralta. Good to see Sal Frelick and Jackson Churio manufacture three runs. Sal had two more hits in the leadoff spot, scored the first run from first base on the double to the left field corner, which is really tough to do because it's a shorter throw from left field to third base than it is from right field to third base or to home plate. And then Jackson Churio scored the third run Scored the third run. Very, very aggressive base running. Had 2 feet first slides, but heads up base running to be able to get to third base and then be able to score for the Brewers in game two. And then I know I've said this before. I've said it a whole bunch to Jake. Abner Uribe has 2 elite pitches. His fastball, his sinking fastball, and his slider, they are both elite pitches. And then Trevor McGill pitched in game two. He allowed a run on a double and a single, but did strike out Lance Nootbaar to win. He did look better than he did against the Padres, which is encouraging. He's trending in the right direction, specifically his curveball and landing that for strikes. Game three. This one is where things get a little interesting, if you want to put it that way. The Cardinals jumped on Jose Quintana fast. The first 3 batters reached, but the Cardinals made the first out at third base, which is a big baseball no-no. Good throw by Jackson Chourio that had to be challenged, which it should not have. But the call was reversed, and then he was easily out. But the Brewers won the challenge. And then the Brewers actually got an obstruction call to go in their favor. I never thought it was going to happen. We had just basically assumed that any time obstruction was called, it was just going to either go against the Brewers or be called on the Brewers. And, yeah, the Brewers got an obstruction call, which was encouraging to see. Never thought it was going to happen. Then we get to a point where Wilson Contreras just pulls a complete dick move. And for context, in the top of the previous inning, he was called out on a third strike that he didn't think was a strike. And then in the bottom of the inning, he steps into Caleb Durbin's base path. And there was nothing that carried him into the base path. The throw wasn't off. He wasn't off balance. He just caught the ball on the ground out and then stepped into the baseline for absolutely no reason. There was no reason that his first step needed to be backwards. So I think he knew what he was doing. I think it was 100% intentional to step into Caleb Durbin's base path. Again, he's probably not doing that to Rhys Hoskins. He's not doing it to his brother. He's not doing it to Christian Yelich. He picked one of the smaller guys on the team, being Caleb Durbin, and was like, yeah, sure, he's going to run into me and fall down. Like, there's no way it wasn't intentional. Now, both Contreras brothers ended up hitting a home run. Wilson Contreras got hit by a pitch. Rhys Hoskins got hit by a pitch. And after this game, one of the two Contreras brothers decided to act like a gigantic douche. And I'll let you guess which one. It's not a hard guess. Listening to Wilson Contreras and Rhys Hoskins talk after the game, two very different approaches. And I know Vinny and Brian Anderson harped on it during the entire game four, that he did not go about it the right way, and they credited Rhys Hoskins for the way that he went about it and the way that I was thinking about it too. Rhys got hit. Contreras got hit. Contreras hit a home run. Our Contreras hit a home run. Call it a wash. Let it go. Done. Rhys Hoskins, after the game, just said, nope, we were just talking about playing first base. Just talking about playing first base. Then Wilson Contreras talks after the game and doesn't call Rhys Hoskins by name, but calls him a fucking pussy. So we're at this point now where all these things happen. Everybody hits their home runs. Everybody takes their hit by pitches. Cardinals get the win. Brewers win the series. One guy is basically like, all right, baseball justice was done. And the other guy decided to start more shit. And, you know, people bring up that he's been previously hit by pitches. He's also previously leaned in to pitches. So I'd feel no sympathy for you for getting hit by pitches when you're trying to get hit by pitches. And there's a difference between knowing you're going to get hit by pitches and sucking it up and getting hit by pitches and then being like, oh, they're throwing at me. We've had a guy who we know is going to get hit by pitches a lot. And he says, thank you, and takes his base. And that's Mark Canna. Mark Canna never complained about getting hit by pitches. He understood that his batting stance was going to lead him to getting hit by pitches more often. He just understood that, took it, moved on. Wilson Contreras should be doing the same thing. not crying, oh, they're throwing at me, and then starting shit after the game when everybody else was going to move on. So I would have liked to know Jake's thoughts on this, and, you know, we'll see when the Brewers play the Cardinals next what his thoughts are, because I'm sure we'll talk about it. I'm sure this is not the last we're going to hear about Willis and Contreras. And the Brewers, obviously, the fans let him hear it when we got to Sunday's game on Father's Day. But to finish up Game 3, I love how Jackson Churiel can decide halfway between first and second base that he's going to just stretch into a triple, having that speed. And then for him to score with his speed again on a passed ball that barely gets outside the dirt of where the batter's boxes are, and he can score on that. It's awesome to see. Love seeing the speed that he plays with. It creates chaos, and it's like, oh, so this is how the Reds feel about Ellie De La Cruz. That's the kind of speed that Jackson Churiel has. It's exciting to watch. It's fun to watch. Now, again, this game should have just been over. Let everything go. Let everything be done. And again, seeing some Cardinals fans whining about the hit by pitch, Wilson took his, literally took the ball, handed it to Jose Quintana. They are former teammates when they were with the Cubs. And then one of them started everything back up post game. And what I said to Jake, and I said this is the comparison that I would make for the way that Wilson Contreras handled himself both in the game and then after the game, is to me, it was giving really big Hunter Dickinson energy. Where Hunter Dickinson, when he was at Michigan, would start a bunch of shit with the Badgers, stomp on people, throw elbows, do a bunch of dirty shit, and then call the Badgers scumbags. That's how it feels with Wilson Contreras. For all of the things to transpire after he started something by stepping into Caleb Durbin's base path because he didn't like a third called strike, and then to have all of the things happen, Brewers wanting to be sweeping it under the rug, you know, call it done, baseball justice was done, and then Wilson Contreras is going to go and call Rhys Hoskins a fucking pussy. Big Hunter Dickinson energy there from me. So, the Cardinals ended their six-game losing streak. We need April Jose Quintana back. Sal is a beast. Joey Ortiz did just miss a game-tying home run. And before I move on to game four, I want to talk about that with what's going on in baseball and who said something about it. So, it feels like the Brewers have had tons of hits to the warning track this year. I know we've talked about it in episodes in the previous weeks. That it feels like the Brewers are hitting tons of warning track balls, and just not getting a bunch of home runs. I saw a report, and it was backed up by Andrew McCutchen, that Major League Baseball is using a ball that has higher seams, which causes more drag on the baseball.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Hail Mary. That's Hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Which deadens the ball and makes it not fly as far. So we've entered into not necessarily a new dead ball era, but the balls that Major League Baseball is using this year, they are higher drag because the seams are higher. So it's unfortunate. Joey Ortiz almost had a game-tying home run in Game 3, just didn't get enough on it. And it feels like there's been a lot of games where Jeff Levering's calling balls, and he's getting ready to announce them as home runs, and then they fall 10 feet short of the warning track. Or they end up being caught up against the wall. It's, I believe, Andrew McCutchen where he's coming from. Andrew McCutchen has definitely been in the league for a long time, and he's got his head in a good place. So I'm trusting Andrew McCutchen on what he's saying from his perspective. The dead ball is unfortunate, and it's kind of affecting the Brewers, but thankfully the Brewers do have the ability to win games in other ways and are staying above 500 by doing so. But a live ball with the Brewers, and you know, they potentially have a whole bunch more home runs, which is encouraging given the fact that they've already got a whole bunch of home runs. Speaking of a whole bunch of home runs, Christian Yelich became the third player in Milwaukee Brewers history to homer on Father's Day and Mother's Day, joining Manny Pena and Ben Ogilvy. Top of the first inning, Rhys Hoskins had a nice play to start a 3-6-3 double play. That resulted in a ton straight retired batters for Quinn Priester, who pitched very well. Six innings pitched, only one earned run. That's fantastic work. And there are two things here. The first one Jake brought up to me, which would be a Quinn Priester apology form, which I think is absolutely deserved with the way that he's been pitching. He threw two good outings, two bad outings after being acquired, and he's been fantastic since then. Thanks, Justin. That is a cool stat for him to homer on Mother's Day and Father's Day. I'm surprised Bill Hall never did it, considering how much love he's gotten for his work on Mother's Day. Drew Avens, up for temporary outfield depth, got his first start, his debut, got an RBI, had a well-hit sack fly, played pretty well in his debut, good for him, was sent back down. No corresponding move had been announced for the Brewers. The Cardinals didn't get their first hit until the top of the fourth inning, and then a no-call strikeout ends up as a single and a run scored with two outs produced, and we're going to hear this again. I'm going to talk about this again. Now, Christian Yelich in the bottom of this inning, on the second pitch of the bottom of the inning, erased that one run that the Cardinals got with his 14th home run of the year and added a double in the bottom of the eighth for good measure. The Brewers just seem to trade for guys with bad numbers and turn them into legit players. And that's where the apology form part of it is due to Quinn Priester. But the other part of this is there needs to be more respect put on the pitching lab. As much respect as the Brewers pitching lab has, it needs more. Just in the last 2 years, they've taken two guys with really bad numbers, traded for them, and turned them into very, very good players at their positions. One being obviously Quinn Priester, and the other being Nick Mears, who did not have great numbers with Colorado, but since coming over has been one of the most reliable relievers in baseball. Obviously one of the most used as well, but that's what makes him reliable. Bottom of the seventh inning on Sunday, Caleb Durbin got a single and then a bunch of infield contact, added a run for the Brewers in insurance. Top of the eighth, he had a web gem against Mason Wynn. And as I said with Nick Mears, he continues to be Pat Murphy's quote-unquote not fucking around guy. Two outs, man on second base in a one-run game. He comes in and strikes out Wilson Contreras, much to the delight of Brewers fans. Wilson Contreras is going to get booed every time he comes to Milwaukee. It's going to happen. Every single time he's going to be like Manny Machado, Wilson Contreras. Those are going to be the two most hated guys in the recent Brewers future. Now, Wilson Contreras, in my mind, doesn't deserve quite as much hate as Manny Machado, because Manny Machado like tried to injure Jesus Aguilar, and Wilson Contreras just knocked Caleb Durbin off his base pass, which could have injured him, but I don't think it's quite as serious of a potential injury. But he's going to get booed every time the Brewers and Cardinals play. Then Trevor McGill gets a Devin Williams style save. I did have that written in my notes. Gets a Devin Williams style save, allows a couple base runners, but then gets three strikeouts. Did have a wild pitch mixed in there, which allowed two runners to advance, but started with a 12 pitch at bat against Nolan Arenado, ending in a single. That was a really, really long at bat. Shout out to Trevor McGill for not getting rattled from that, and still finishing the inning, still finishing the win for the Brewers, and the Brewers took 3 out of 4 from the Cardinals in what was a very, very important series for the Brewers to win 3 out of 4. Now, the Brewers did start their series with the Cubs last night, a 3-game series in Chicago, another very important series for the NL Central. And Chad Patrick was yanking his cutter a little bit early, had a hit-by-pitch and a double that was almost caught by Jackson Churio, but two strikeouts through the first inning, twice through the batting order. He had 5 1/3 innings pitched, And then the zone got extremely tight versus Happ and Tucker and Suzuki. And I just want to put this up because this is, to me, a pretty frustrating set of events here. Starting with the strike zone for Chad Patrick versus Ian Happ. This is the first batter second batter in the sixth inning. And first two pitches here, pitch one right at the top corner. That's a strike. Second pitch right on the outside corner. That's a strike. Both pitches called balls. Then a foul ball, another ball, ball four or pitch four is a ball. That's off the outside corner. Totally fine. Pitch five ends up being a called strike. That should be strike three. That should be strike three. But it's not. And then pitch six ends up being ball four on pitch six, and Ian Happ draws a walk. Then you get to Kyle Tucker. He makes a double. And then you get to Seiya Suzuki. And again, pitch one. That's on the outside corner. That's a strike. That's three examples in just one inning of pitches that should have been called strikes for Chad Patrick that weren't. So I'm not excusing Chad Patrick for giving up a three-run home run to Seiya Suzuki. But looking at these at-bats, you got to kind of feel for Chad Patrick thinking like, dude, I have to throw meatballs to get a strike call? Three batters. Two of them had pitches that should have been strikes, call balls. It's got to feel pretty one-sided if you're Chad Patrick throwing to the Cubs at this point. And if we're at this point, pitch two should be an 0-1 count, not a 1-0 count. Chad Patrick throws a different variation of his fastball here. It's possible that Seiya Suzuki still hits this ball out. Fine. But Ian Happ should not be on base. So the Brewers, if you look at it differently, depending on how you view, if you take the Tucker and Suzuki at bats at the same, you know, that still takes one run away from the Cubs. But then we get later on in the game, and Rob Zestrizny is pitching. So it's same team. So it's not even like I'm saying, you know, Brewers should be getting calls that the Cubs are getting or that the Cubs aren't getting calls that the Brewers are getting, whatever. But here, Rob Zestrizny throwing to Seiya Suzuki, and pitch seven here gets called a strike. Why is Chad Patrick not getting that call? Rob Zestrizny's not a star by any means. So it's not like he's just getting calls because he's, you know, Ryan Helsley, for example, from the Cardinals, you know, being one of the more recognizable closers in baseball. Like, if Chad Patrick gets this call on the edge of the strike zone, the sixth inning is completely different. And, you know, again, the deflection is going to be, oh, the Brewers need to score more runs, which is true. The Brewers do need to score more runs. They were 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position last night. They obviously need to be better in that department. But that doesn't mean they shouldn't get calls that are fair. They shouldn't be getting shafted by shitty umpires that don't call strikes consistently. So, again, I feel for Chad Patrick in this situation. It's got to be tough to be throwing pitches that should be getting called strikes and aren't, and feeling like you have to throw meatballs just to get strike calls, which then you do a couple times. You get a double ripped off of you, and then a three-run home run. Now, Isaac Collins gave the Brewers an early lead with his first left-handed home run of the season, and then made a diving catch in the bottom of the inning. And then the top of the fourth had his second hit of the day, which was a double. Very exciting game for Isaac Collins. What's not super exciting is the fourth inning. First and second, no out. Isaac Collins is one of the guys on base. And the Brewers have Caleb Durbin bunting. First and second, no out. This is one of the at-bats with runners in scoring position, and Caleb Durbin pops out on a bunt. Can we please stop bunting in these situations. You have first and second, no out. Why are you making an out on purpose with runners in scoring position when a ground ball by Caleb Durbin probably isn't going to be a double play anyways? You're saying, okay, here we go. We're going to make an out on purpose in hopes of advancing our guys to have second and third with one out versus first and second with no outs. We're taking the bat out of Caleb Durbin's hands and trying to move guys 90 feet by making an out on purpose. Making outs happens all the time anyways. Hits are harder to get, and you're taking away an opportunity to get a hit to commit an out on purpose. Just please stop bunting in that situation. And I will pump the brakes the slightest bit only to bring up that I'm okay with bunting if you're doing it to try to get hits. We've had this conversation a whole bunch of times. I'm okay with guys like Bryce Terang bunting, Sal Frelick, you know, if they're bunting to try to get hits. Bunting in a sacrifice way, a sacrificial manner, just stop doing it. Good players get out 70% of the time. Why are you trying to increase that number? Stop making outs on purpose. They happen often enough. Now, Pete Crow Armstrong did pull a reverse Isaac Collins in the eighth inning. He had a diving catch in the top of the inning and then a home run in the bottom. Pete Crow Armstrong is good. He's not MVP level. No MVPs batting 270. Just throwing that out there. The Cubs are good, but the home plate umpire can shove it. That was some bullshit, and hopefully the rest of the series is better for the umpiring as well as for the Brewers, who have two more games against the Cubs, supposed to be tonight and tomorrow afternoon. And then they have three at the Twins. Then they have three game series against the Pirates. We'll actually have all three of those games next week. So we will have eight games next week as long as all eight games take place. It's going to be kind of up in the air what's going to happen with the Brewers and Cubs tonight with potential weather in the area. Hashtag put a roof on it. Even just a canopy just so you can play your games, Chicago. But, you know, whatever. We'll just sit up here in Milwaukee with our retractable roof and our beautiful stadium. But it's neither here nor there. So the Brewers, eight more games between now and next week. And Jake will be back next week. So I will have a guy to bump some thoughts off of. Hopefully we get to see our second Jacob Mizorowski start in that time. The only other things to talk about with the Brewers are the couple of trades that happened. First being the Aaron Civale trade, and a lot of mixed reviews on the Aaron Civale trade. You know, asking why they're trading for a guy that's batting 170, you know, if you were going to, you know, potentially need depth, you should have kept him. He didn't want to be here. So there's that first. Secondly, very possible that his agent would have told him to sit out games instead of going to the bullpen because he wants to get paid as a reliever. He's on a contract here. He wants to be paid as a starter. So he's going to be wanting to start games because that's where he's going to make his money. The best relievers make not a lot compared to just middle reliever or middle of the pack, back end of the rotation starters. A number five starter is going to make more than probably 80% of relievers in baseball. So he wants to be pitching as a starter to be paid as a starter. So there's that part of it. Again, very possible that his agent tells him not to pitch if he's going to be pitching out of the bullpen. So just trading him to gain a roster spot is worth it at that point. And the Brewers got Andrew Vaughn. He was a target of mine like 2 years ago that I wanted the Brewers to go after back when he was hitting 17 and 21 home runs in two back-to-back years in 2022 and 2023. So if the Brewers can extract that version of Andrew Vaughn, he's very similar to Jake Bowers where he can play first base. He can play the corner outfield positions. You can use him as a DH. He's got some pop in his bat. Very similar to that. The reports that I saw were that the Brewers were going to be willing to listen to offers on Jake Bowers now that they've acquired Andrew Vaughn, where they are going to leave in AAA until he gets his bat right. And the encouraging part of it, Andrew Vaughn in his first game with the Nashville Sounds last night hit a grand slam. So very, very early encouraging return for Andrew Vaughn. And then the other trade the Brewers made to send Wes Clark to the Astros, I believe just for cash considerations. But they traded Wes Clark to the Astros. Basically, kind of another ripple effect of the Andrew Vaughn trade. Wes Clark was like a backup outfielder, first baseman. He played a little bit of catcher, but not much in AAA. Jefferson Cuero is going to be doing all of that. And obviously now with Andrew Vaughn there and a guy that we've talked about with Javik Blake from the Bloxy Shuckers, another guy that we're very excited about is Ernesto Martinez. So, again, if the Brewers trade Jake Bowers, the two guys to watch out for would be Andrew Vaughn and Ernesto Martinez. But Wes Clark is now out of the picture in Nashville. He was kind of struggling to start the year as well. So those are the two Brewers trades we have to announce. I believe the trade deadline is the very beginning of July. So maybe next week, Jake and I'll get some trade targets out. Other than that, stick around. The NBA draft is next weekend. So we'll have some coverage on that. And Major League Baseball trade deadline's coming up. And then we are getting into planning our football content. We're having a meeting soon to discuss what we're going to do for the Badgers and the Packers as the offseason, as the summer rolls on. And once the summer is done, then it's football season. And we'll have all the sports going. But until then, we will see you guys next week.